Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You know, my mother would tell me that I have a lot of nerve if I raise those issues.
I'm so high right now, y'all. I'm about to go to sleep right now, man.
Stop. Just stop. I made my ruling.
Lawyers yelling at the judge yelling back, possible misconduct in front of the jury, defiant witnesses, and controversial rulings. We have some of the biggest recent moments in the RICO case against rapper Young Thug and several co-defendants as it drags on in Georgia. Welcome to Sidebar, presented by Law and Crime. I'm Jesse Weber. It's been a while since we've talked about the Young Thug trial out of Atlanta here on Sidebar. And if you haven't been following the case, there have been fireworks over the last few weeks that we're going to get into. So you might remember, though, that Young Thug, whose real name is Jeffrey Lamar Williams, he was indicted on a laundry list of RICO or racketeering charges that accuse him of leading a criminal organization known as YSL or Young Slime Life. And when we talk about the main underlying charge here, conspiracy to violate the RICO statute, violate the racketeering statute, there has to be an agreement to break the law, and there has to be overt steps or acts that were taken in furtherance of that agreement. That's what we mean by a conspiracy. So overt acts don't have to be crimes. They just have to be certain actions that were taken by the co-conspirators. The idea here is that Williams and others had an agreement to participate in gang activities, and there were 191 overt acts taken in furtherance of the YSL gang. That's the key there. It has to be in furtherance of the gang, not that these people committed crimes to benefit themselves as individuals, but that it was to benefit the gang, the criminal enterprise as a whole. Now, there were more than 24 other men that were charged alongside Young Thug, but that number dwindled down by the time we got to the start of trial. That was for various reasons. Their cases were severed, they took plea deals, but now we have the current defendants and we have Mr. Williams. So the defense is suggesting that YSL, though, is merely a record label and that there is no gang here, that there is no criminal activity afoot. Now, with all of that in mind, let me be clear about something. This trial has become a spectacle in my mind. I can't feel like I'm the only one that believes this, because between the courtroom packed with defendants and their attorneys, to the notoriety of Mr. Williams, to the absolute incredible amount of time this trial has taken and is going to take. Sometimes I know, I ask myself, what is going on right now? It took almost a year just for jury selection. The trial finally started last November, but since then, we've had, what, less than 60 days of actual court? And while it is certainly entertaining on one hand, we can't forget that these are real lives on the line here. These are very serious crimes that are being alleged. And we have real defendants, Williams and his co-defendants. They could face years in prison if they're convicted. Now, for now, I should tell you that Mr. Williams is actually locked up in the Fulton County Jail as this trial progresses. But what we want to do is we want to take you through some of the recent fiery moments from inside that courtroom, as well as some big rulings that have impacted the case. And let's start this out with a blow up over a motion to suppress some evidence. We're talking about how Doug Weinstein, he's representing Diamante Kendrick, also known as Yak Gotti. And Weinstein wanted to suppress a 2015 police interrogation video of Kendrick because he claimed that the investigators violated his client's rights by asking him more questions after he had requested a lawyer. Now, on March 14th, the judge watched this police interview outside the presence of the jury and made a decision. Take a listen to Judge Earl Glanville.
During the course of page two, during the course of over 2 hours of the initial interview, defendant did not ask to speak to an attorney. At some point during the interview, Detective Joe Galpin, who was investigating a separate homicide incident, entered the room. Defendant then indicated he wanted to talk with his attorney, and questioning stopped. So Judge Baberman, I can't tell whether or not he took into account what I heard on the video, which was, I need to talk to my lawyer. I don't want to talk no more. That is equivocal to this court, me, Judge Glanville, that he invoked his or withdrew his consent at that point in time and did not wish to speak to law enforcement officers anymore. I understand the state's argument about parsing it out, asking for clarification, but I think that once he's, you know, the appellate, you know, case law that I've looked at, you know, in Paul Doe and others, he has invoked his right at that point in time, and it's this court's opinion that anything thereafter would be inadmissible.
Your Honor, the court also found that he reinitiated, and that was what.
That's their issue. That's not my issue.
Your Honor, with respect to the statements that were made after that time, we do have, as I stated, Investigator Thorpe to tell the court on the record, present under oath, that it was not Detective Thorpe, it was the defendant that reinitiated the conversation with Detective Thorpe. Our representations to the court are not evidence, and since the state has the burden of proof.
Okay, but I've seen the video at this point in time.
The video does not encompass when the defendant actually reinitiated contact.
But the problem is, he invokes, and then we don't know what goes on in the 45 minutes. But we come back afterwards, and you, and at that point in time, you don't get to eat your cake, have your cake and eat it too. It's once he invokes, that's it. It's over.
Your Honor, that's
they should not be bringing him back at that point in time and asking, well, let me just clarify a little bit about whether or not these statements were made to these set of detectives or to Galpin. I think that you all are just annoyed more so that your detective did something that he probably regrets now, and that you all probably would not have told him to do. Don't interrupt this particular investigation or this particular hearing, because what you did is you just now created a wrinkle that now I got to deal with, or whether or not the defendant has invoked his right to counsel. He has. Once you initiate your right, or you revoke your right to be examined and have counsel and to have counsel present at that point in time. The courts are very, let's just say, cautious about reinitiation at that point in time. And at that, you all presented to me what was the salient point of this particular issue is. So if I believe at this point in time that he's invoked unequivocally his right to counsel at this point in time, the questioning is supposed to stop. You're not supposed to go out and get cigarettes and do everything else. It's supposed to stop. I mean, that's this court's opinion. So, and that's my rule.
The thing is that, Your Honor, we did not.
You're arguing with me now, Ms. Love. So can we stop at this point in time?
Your Honor.
If you have other evidence independent of this, I'll consider it at the appropriate time.
And we do, and that is what I was asking. So if the court will permit me to actually introduce the evidence that we have, as the court in State versus Paul Doe 309 Georgia 130, where it says a suspect who asks for a lawyer at any time during a custodial interrogation may not be subjected to further questioning until the suspect reinitiates the conversation. And in that, they are citing Dozier versus the state, 306 Georgia at 35, Your Honor, Edwards versus Arizona. And, Your Honor, this is a 2020 Georgia Supreme Court case. And they hold
Your Honor, at
things.
Some point,
Your Honor,
Your Honor,
I'm talking, Your Honor, and I don't know why I am being interrupted. I will not stop, Your Honor.
Hey,
I was speaking.
Ms. Lowe. Y'all got
I'm sorry, I was
both
speaking.
Y'all can't talk at the same time.
I know, I was under speaking and I expect to be allowed to speak when I'm speaking.
Hey, both of you all need to just take it down a notch.
And so, Your Honor, if I may finish, because I was the one speaking before Mr. Weinstein interrupted.
But you continually engage in this pattern of behavior, Ms. Love. You don't want to accept my ruling.
Your Honor.
And I know you're being an advocate, but at some point, stop. Just stop. I made my ruling. Good, bad, or indifferent to you. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some.
I do accept
okay,
that.
Okay, no,
but
you
Judge,
don't. No,
not,
you don't.
Your Honor, we have just not been able to present the evidence. That
no,
the,
you
don't.
I get it. I get
present.
And I get it. And if you have an independent basis to introduce statements that may not, you know, or that may be not subject to the fruit of the poisonous tree or any other thing or any other issue related to evidence that may have flown out of this particular interview, then I'll hear it at that point in time.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that the bailiff had to get involved in that. But look, it is an important issue. The idea of a suspect asking to speak to counsel, the questioning has to stop. So it's an interesting legal issue if his statements could come in. If he initiated the conversation once again, the judge was not persuaded by the prosecution's argument, said that once he requested that attorney, that's it. And felt law enforcement, softened him up and improperly got him to say stuff. Well, a few minutes later, Doug Weinstein, again, the attorney for Mr. Kendrick, got to have the last word for the time being. And what a word it was.
Your Honor, I apologize for interrupting the state earlier, but the state can talk the ears off a donkey. This continued filibustering has got to stop so that opposing counsel can speak. Your rulings at some point have got to be final, Your Honor. Whether you hear from Detective Thorpe or not is irrelevant. He requested his lawyer. He invoked his right to not speak anymore. And I don't care what schmoozing Detective Thorpe did out at the Sally Port, taking my client off camera. I don't know what went on down there. I don't know what self-serving, I have some idea. I don't know what self-serving statement Detective Thorpe could possibly give to this court that would cause the court to change their order. This continued going back whenever the state loses in this case has got to stop at some point, Your Honor. Thank you.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
But this certainly wasn't the only explosive moment over the last few weeks, or that the tense moments only were between Judge Glanville and the prosecution team. Oh, no. Because on March 20th, there was a moment between Judge Glanville and Williams attorney Brian Steele. It's hard to hear because the audio is so bad, but what ends up happening is the judge accuses Steele of kind of being unprepared and almost seems to berate him in front of the jury. Steele points out that the jury needs to be dismissed, and then he goes to the podium to address his grievance with the court.
This is the second time that this honorable court in front of the jury has addressed me inappropriately and wrongly. Second time. The first time I gave the state discovery of a song from a Super Bowl weeks before. There was an objection. You assumed that I didn't give it to the state. I didn't want to embarrass the court. So you were yelling at me and saying, do you understand me? Do you understand me? And instead of saying, do you understand that you're wrong? I sat here and I said, yes, Your Honor. That was to protect the integrity of this courtroom and the court. Now you say in front of the jury how unprepared I am. I am not unprepared for anything.
Okay,
No.
Steele.
I need to make
Mr.
a record. Your Honor,
Mr. Steele,
I need
wait
to
a
make
second.
This record.
When you keep delaying, okay, and that's what's happening to the court. You keep delaying and elongating and pushing out these particular our ability to present a seamless case in front of the jury. Now, I asked you those two particular questions because if they turned over the audio to you in discovery and you've listened to them already, then you either have an objection or you don't have an objection. And I was trying to solicit from you whether or not we could just go ahead and just hear it. So you can imagine my frustration because all these little delays just elongate out the whole our presentation in front of the jury. That's for your benefit, not for mine, Your Honor. So that's why I've told you all at various times during this particular case. It's not because I want to embarrass you, Mr. Steele. It's just that I'm trying to kind of keep this thing presented in a way that the jury can listen to it.
And the court is wrong. This is the second time. And you know what it does to me? I don't care. I'm hurt because you're a court, but I really don't care. But what does it do to Mr. Williams?
Mr. Steele, I'm not trying to personally insult you or hurt your feelings, okay? You are a grown professional advocate. I am a grown professional jurist. And people say things to me that border on the lines of I could take action or not. You have certainly said some of those things to me during the trial of this case. I have let them go. So, sir, that's just the trial of the case, okay?
No, but that man's life is here.
And you know you're doing a fine job in representing him. You know what? That's just the way we are right now.
I make a motion to ask you to please recuse yourself. I know it has to be in writing within 5 days. If you want me to do that, I'll do it. And it has to go to another judge. But this is what's going on, Your Honor, whether you see it or not. You're yelling at me in front of a jury for nothing. And then you won't apologize. And I did nothing wrong ever.
I get it. You don't want the jury looking at you that way. What the court says, sometimes juries really hone in on. So if it puts Steele or Mr. Williams in a bad spot, I get it. But again, Judge Glanville denied that motion on the spot. But Mr. Steele, he wasn't done yet.
But I'm asking for a mistrial.
Okay, now, Ms. Love.
I don't think it's a fair forum for Mr. Williams. Okay. And I don't want to ask for a mistrial. But I have no choice when the court is saying what it said, that I'm not going to repeat it in front of a jury. That's hurtful. And I'm not saying me. I mean, regardless of what I think of it, it's hurtful to Mr. Williams getting a fair trial.
And the judge denied that as well. Hey, everybody. So I want to thank Morgan and Morgan for sponsoring this episode of Sidebar. Always love talking about them. Now, here is the incredible thing about Morgan and Morgan, and one of the reasons why I like talking about them so much.
Hey, say something about our big wins.
You're not supposed to come on camera. The reason Morgan & Morgan, America's largest personal injury law firm, is so big, and I'm sure you can guess it, is because they win a lot. And that's
Forget huge verdicts.
Yeah, I was. They've won big verdicts. $6.8 million in New York, $26 million in Philadelphia. You see, the thing about them is they don't settle for lowball insurance offers from insurance companies, which is something.
Mention that you can submit a claim from your couch at home and on your phone.
Dan? They've completely modernized the process by submitting your claim, talking to your legal team. It's all done straight from your smartphone. Again, that's something
with
Eight clicks or less. Yes. You can see if you have a case in just a few minutes.
You have 1,000 lawyers. You have over 1,000 lawyers.
All right. You know what, Dan? If you really think you can do better, maybe you should just do it yourself.
What Jesse was getting at is if you've ever been injured in an accident, you can check out Morgan & Morgan. You can submit a claim in 8 clicks or less. To start your claim, just visit forthepeople.com/LCSidebar.
You came a little too close to me. It hurt me a little bit. I'm probably actually going to have to hire you guys now, but that was well said. That was well said. Well, we have had some very interesting witnesses in this trial, to say the least. And one of the witnesses that we've seen a lot over the past few weeks is a man named Adrian Bean. And just to give you an idea of how slow this trial has been going, the snail's pace of this trial, Bean first got on the stand on February 29th and finally finished up on March 19th. But he was actually really on the stand for, I think, 5 days. The prosecution brought Bean in to talk about a shooting that happened more than a decade ago in Atlanta. Prosecutors wanted him to establish that Williams was present at the scene of that drive-by. Bean was allegedly the getaway driver, but Bean, he wouldn't do it. No, he didn't give the prosecution what they needed. He said he was doing so many drugs in 2013 that he doesn't really remember the shooting or the car crash that happened after. That shooting is one of the prosecution's overt acts that I mentioned before, that they want to tie Williams to the scene to show his participation in apparent gang activity. But going back to Bean, several times over the course of his testimony, we heard these taped interviews and phone calls after Bean was arrested following the shooting. According to retired Detective David Quinn, Bean was one of the first people to even mention Williams during that investigation.
This sounds like the truth. You're the driver. You really cleared something up for me, the thug, and I got to go out here and find a picture of this joker. Because it's important, because I don't think he should get away with it if he was in the car. You're not making this up. Thug was in the car.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, let me
Now, I can't testify. I can't do none of that now, you know.
All right, you ain't got to testify. That's on you. I'm
going to put me on blast.
Well, that's not what I do. What I do is I'm trying to go slow and get all the information I need in relation to you, right? That's all I'm talking about. But the other people involved, I mean, it sounds to me like Thug got you all involved. I know you're a grown man and everything, but he came down here with an easy way to make money, it sounds like, and it went... Who knew the police were going to be there?
So much for not having to testify. But when prosecutor Adrian Love tried to question her witness, this pretty much sums up what happened.
My statement is that I don't remember anything from 2013, man.
Despite that, in a win for the state, prosecutors were able to get these recorded interviews and written transcripts introduced into the record. So even if Bean doesn't remember, they have it on tape and the jury hears it. Okay, so was Bean's testimony helpful for the defense? It's an interesting question because in January of 2023, Mr. Williams' attorney, Brian Steele, he sat down with Bean, recorded their conversation, and in that interview, Bean says Young Thug was not there, said that the police were the ones who wanted to connect the rapper to the crime.
I'm interested in Jeffrey Williams, Young Thug. Was he in, around, a participant, given direction, anything involved in that event that we're talking about involving Dirty Red in September 11, 2013?
No, sir. Okay. Like I explained, when all that occurred, everything took place, they was, trying to force him in on something that he wasn't even in. Like I said, I'm not going to lie on the brother. You know what I mean? He wasn't with us. Young Thug was not in the car with us that day. I don't even know how his name really got mentioned. Maybe it was a lot of hype through the streets. I might have was uncomfortable talking and said his name, but then to saying that he was with us. You know what I'm saying?
And when you say that they wanted him involved in the case or whatever your words were, who was that?
Detectives and other, people that was inquiring. You know what I'm saying? I don't know, discuss the neighborhood or whatever.
The police?
Yeah, police.
The authorities or whatever. The prosecutors, the police?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Now saying he was kind of forced by authorities to give them Young Thug, but it wasn't true. Adrian Bean, just doesn't seem like the most reliable witness. He says one thing here, another thing there, then tells the prosecutor he actually doesn't remember anything from that time. And during some of his testimony, Bean lashed out, questioned why he was even in the courtroom.
All this going on right here on this, got me up on this stand, talking about this and that third, all this extra stuff that's going on, Your Honor. Am I on trial, Your Honor?
Sir, you just have to answer the questions, unfortunately, at this point in time, okay? That's all I can tell you.
Am I on trial?
No, sir, you're not on trial. But you do have to, but you have been properly summoned here as a witness, and you're subject to examination until I release you.
I never consent to do none of this, sir. I ain't signed nothing. My name ain't on nothing. They come give me, they y'all don't threaten to lock me up. Hey, I got a family, too.
And after all this time on the witness stand, it seemed like Bean was pretty much fed up with being there. I mean, just listen to what he said right in the middle of questioning toward the end of his testimony.
You just heard that you explained that you qualified it as the detectives and police. And I asked you, the authorities, the police, the prosecutors, I just made it broad, that they forced Jeffrey Williams into it. Did you hear you say that?
Man, can I get a water or something? I'm so high right now, y'all. I'm about to go to sleep on y'all, man. I ain't gonna tell you no lie.
He's so high right now, he is about to pass out. I have covered trials for a while now, and I can tell you right now, uncategorically, can't say I've heard a witness say that one on the stand. No, that is amazing, to say the least. Amazing. All right, let's move on to another witness who was actually not shown on camera, only identified as AB. In fact, this person didn't come to court at first, defied a subpoena that she says she never received. So this witness was allegedly the victim of an armed robbery back in 2013, reportedly involving Mr. Williams, which is apparently not in the indictment. But Prosecutor Love told Judge Glanville that she has spoken with the witness several times about the court needing to hear her testimony and said that the witness indicated she did not want to come to court. So she ended up telling Love that she was in the hospital, couldn't come in, but the DA's office says that officers found her at home, actually arrested her on a material witness warrant. But if the prosecution expected her to be particularly cooperative once she was on the stand or to give some bombshell incriminating testimony against the defense, they were wrong.
Learned after asking that it was a friend of your child's father, known to you as Thug, who was at the door.
No.
Do you recall telling the police that you opened the door and let Thug inside your home?
No.
Did you ever say to the police that Thug's brother was also with him?
No.
And do you recall telling the police that you turned your back on Thug, Thug's brother, and a person you called DK after letting them in your home?
No.
Do you recall telling the police that you turned your back on them to walk into the kitchen to make your baby a bottle?
No.
Do you recall telling the police that when you went to the kitchen, Thug's brother put a silver 9mm to the back of your head?
No. And my baby didn't even drink bottles. My baby was breastfed, so no.
Did you tell the police that the two suspects, along that Thug, his brother, and DK demanded money from you and your gun?
No.
Not a lot to say there. Well, the following day, AB was cross-examined by Keith Adams. This is another member of Williams' defense team. Listen to this bombshell that was dropped.
You were asked some questions by the assistant district attorney, Ms. Love. Is that right?
Yes.
You remember her asking you at one point, are you afraid of Jeffrey Williams? You remember that question?
Yes.
And she may not have said Jeffrey Williams. She may have said, are you afraid of Thug? You remember that?
Yes.
Okay. And your answer was no. Is that right?
Yes.
You have no reason and had no reason to be afraid of Jeffrey Williams. Is that right?
No, I don't.
Okay. In fact, when you testified yesterday, you were on edge. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
You didn't want to be here.
Yes.
And part of it is because of the interactions, and your reaction yesterday was based on the interactions you had had, not with Mr. Williams or anyone over here, but with the district attorney's office. Isn't that true?
Yes.
You told us when you were back there that they had been, quote, harassing you for a number of months. Is that true?
Yes.
And in fact, you said that prior to coming out and testifying, that the only person you were afraid of, you didn't want to be around, was Investigator Hamilton from the district attorney's office. Is that true?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton had contacted you prior to yesterday. Is that right?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton had harassed you. Is that correct?
Yes.
In fact, you told us when you were back there that you didn't want to come out and see him because he had sexually harassed you. True?
Yes.
You felt like, and you told us, that you were really concerned about coming out here.
I'm going to object as to relevance.
I'm going to overrule the objection.
You told us that the times when he would contact you, it seemed like he was trying to date you.
Yes.
He wanted to meet you, supposedly to talk about the case.
Yes.
But you didn't feel comfortable going to meet him by yourself.
Nope.
Because you didn't feel comfortable going to meet him by yourself, you brought your 20-year-old son with you.
Yes.
Was that before or after you met with Mr. Hamilton and he told you, don't talk to nobody else?
That was after. He told me before that. I came in, I seen Ms. Love. And that's when I told y'all yesterday that me and Miss Love, we only discussed for a brief because they was like trying to tilt me.
Quite the revelation, right? Well, AB was back on the stand again a few days later and explained more about her accusations against Investigator Hamilton as the defense showed text messages on a large screen.
Now, how about the next one? That same night, Wednesday, February 7th, 6:45 p.m., where he says, hit me up if you're bored later. We're not going to talk shop. Remember that text message?
Yes.
Did you talk to him later on?
Yes.
Did y'all talk shop?
Yes.
What do you want to talk about?
Going out.
Going out? Going out as in walking out the door or going out on a date?
A date.
And this is February 7th of 2024, this year, when the investigator for the DA's office is supposed to be talking to you about a case, but in fact is calling you, talking to you about going out on a date. Is that true?
Yes.
Did the fact that this employee of the district attorney's office was trying to date you come into your mind as you're thinking about whether you have to come in here and testify or not?
Yes.
This is really not a great look for the Fulton County District Attorney's Office, to say the least, but the drama did not end there. No. Another big witness in this case, called by the state, was Walter Murphy. And he took the stand on April 10th. And to give you a little bit idea who we're talking about, so Murphy, also known as DK, he took a plea deal in which he entered a guilty plea to a charge of conspiracy to commit RICO, and he would be required to testify in this trial. Another important witness for the prosecution, right? Murphy, childhood friends with Williams, who he knew as Lil Jeff. But he says after he got sent to prison, he and Williams didn't reconnect.
What is your current relationship with Mr. Williams?
I don't have a relationship with him.
When did that relationship cease?
It never ceased. It's just I went to prison.
And while you were in prison, you did not maintain your relationship or friendship?
When you're in prison, you don't retain no relationship. All that in.
And since you got out of prison, did you not rekindle your friendship when you got out of prison?
I had more important relationships to worry about than friends, like my kids.
The prosecution asked Murphy about some of his tweets from 2012 that included terms used by gangs, including the tendency to change the letter C to the letter B in words to show support for the Bloods gang. Murphy testified he did a lot of things like this when he was just young and dumb.
And I want to go down to August 25th, 2012. Can you read that tweet on August 25th, 2012?
That's a song.
What does it say?
It's been a long time coming, baby. I just called to see how you've been doing lately.
Now, you just said it's been a long time coming. Is there a B or a C there for coming?
It's a B.
Okay. Why would you tweet it as a B?
That's just what I was doing right then. I did a lot of stuff without meaning or purpose. I was childish, young, dumb.
Again, not really giving the prosecution what they needed. What did prosecutors do? Well, they walked Murphy through his plea deal and what he admitted in those documents. Murphy is allegedly a co-founder of YSL, which he formed around 2012.
Did you ever create a group called YSL?
A group, yeah.
Okay. Was it something else besides a group?
Not to my means of knowledge.
And what does number one say?
Why I said otherwise, known as Young Slime Life, began as a neighborhood group but evolved into a gang.
Okay. And did you initial number one?
Yeah.
Those are your initials, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So when I just asked you, was YSL a gang, why did you tell me you don't know? Did you not acknowledge that in this document?
Yeah, but it said evolved. I don't know when it evolved into a gang. I know when we made it, it was a neighborhood group. It was right. A group of guys from the neighborhood made it a music group.
And in this acknowledgement that you initialed, you said it evolved into a gang. That's what you initialed.
Yeah.
Okay. So
YSL, I don't know when it evolved into a gang, though.
I didn't ask you when. I just asked you, did YSL become a gang?
Yeah.
All right.
And that would happen a lot, him being confronted with statements he made to law enforcement or the state versus what he's saying or maybe not saying on the stand about what he knows regarding YSL, Young Thug, and others. He was on the stand under direct examination for a couple of days, cross-examined by the defense attorneys. That started on Friday, with more cross expected on Monday. And that brings us to something that we know you're all thinking. Is this trial ever going to end? It is a fair question to ask. Well, the defense attorneys, they're certainly worried about the pace and the sheer number of witnesses left to go. So far, they've made it through the testimony of about 40 witnesses.
We are losing our jurors. We are losing our jurors. I look over there at them, and they are trying their best. They are trying their hardest. Often, they are taking notes, but other times, They have just tuned out.
In fact, Doug Weinstein, who represents co-defendant Diamante Kendrick, I mentioned it before, filed a motion back in March to put a limit on the number of witnesses that will be called. Well, Judge Uriel Glanville is none too happy with the pace of this trial and even suggested he might have a remedy that not everybody would be excited about.
I have spoken with our sheriff, and consistent with the court, if necessary need be, we'll start having court on Saturday and Sunday. Yeah, well, that's my call. So if you don't want your Saturday and Sunday sucked up, I think we need to work a little harder in terms of being able to streamline, and that goes to both sides. And look, I don't want to work that way too, because it's me and my staff and my team and the sheriff and his team and everything else. But we will do it, because we're going to have to recap some days. I don't want to be in 2027 trying this case. Or as Mr. Steele said, I want to be here next Super Bowl trying this case. I have power of contempt. I don't want to use that. I don't. But it's come down. We've been in trial a long time. I think I've been very clear with everybody about my expectations, which serve you all and your ability as advocates in this case to be how to try the best case you have.
The judge ordered the prosecution to provide him with an updated witness list, which seems now to have been whittled down to 150. But to be fair about that, that's down from around 700 at the start of this trial. Just remember that. That's just for the prosecution's case, by the way. Not even who the six defendants want to call.
I do have some concerns about 120 days of trial time. That's going to take almost 4 months. And, you know, I'll remind the state, you told me, or Ms. Hilton told me, it's going to take about 6 months. At this rate, it's going to be 12 months. And that doesn't include anything that the defense may choose to. I mean, I'm concerned about your case in chief at this point in time. The defense will present whatever they wish to do with, and I'll deal with it. We'll deal with it accordingly. But,
We were trying to be finished. June, frankly, as I told the court earlier,
yes.
We can't control cross-examination, and that has extended our estimation of the time that we expect.
Well, like I said, if you disclose things, if you don't disclose everything, and we don't disclose things timely, then what I'm doing is I'm taking up more time. What I want to do is I don't want us to take up 2-3 hours. I can't do that anymore. So I'm telling you, you need to make very sure that you've disclosed the evidence and you'll be able to tell me what day you did, because if you can't, I'm gonna exclude it. That's my remedy at this point in time.
We will see, of course, if the court is able to keep things on track, but between late starts, early dismissals, long comfort breaks, days spent arguing motions, vacation time, and more, we really could be talking about a case that is really years, takes years, and I feel really, really bad for that jury, to say the least. But of course, here on Sidebar, we will bring you all of the latest updates. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jesse Weber. I'll speak to you next time.